Smriti
of his memory,
Bhutoplavat, due to the disruption. A sleeping person imagines an alternative reality for himself and sees himself as having various names and forms, forgets his waking identity, which is distinct from the dream. Similarly, the senses of one whose consciousness is bewildered by illusion perceive only the names and forms of material objects. But such a person loses his memory and cannot know you. Therefore, just as a person's dream is a secondary reality created from the stock of his memories and desires, so this universe exists as the inferior creation of the Supreme Lord, in no real way separate from him. And just as the person who awakens from sleep experiences the higher reality of his waking life, so the Supreme Lord also has his distinct higher reality beyond everything we know of this world. In his own words, Mayatatam idam sarvam jagatavyaktamurtina machthani sabhutani nachaham teshvavastitaha nachavastani bhutani kasyame yogamaisvaram bhutta prindna chabhuttasto mamatma bhutta bhavana. By me in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. And yet, everything that is created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence. Although I am the maintainer of all living entities, and although I am everything, I am not part of this cosmic manifestation, for myself is the very source of creation. We read here in chapter 9. Text 4 to 5. Om Ajyanatimirandasya Dunanjana Sulakaya Chakchurumilitam Jena Tasmaye Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stavitam Jena Bhuttale Svayam Rupa Kadamahayam Tadaktim Svamadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pamumlam Jayate Girim Yakri Patamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatayanam. Use this analogy often in his explanation of the state of being that we experience in the material creation, the material existence. The living entity is described as being just like a person who's asleep, who in his dreaming state creates a separate or alternate reality. Which is basically illusion. Although not unreal. It's illusion, but not unreal. Interestingly enough, this is the nature of the material world is that it's illusory, but it exists. It is real. The Prabhupada explains how the impersonalists say that the material creation is false. Jagan mithya. It is false. Because of its temporality. One moment it exists, and the next minute it doesn't. You know, when Mahavishnu lies down in the causal, in the Karanajal, in the causal ocean, then he falls asleep. He has his feet massaged, and then he's resting, having a snooze. And then in his sleeping condition, then the material universe has come out through his breathing, described through the pores of his skin. In and out. And for some period of time, the material creation is manifest, and all the forms, here it's mentioned, nama matrin, nama matra. Yes, but also later on here. Nama matre shu, having names and forms. So the material creation is the dreaming state, if you like. It's the sleeping condition of Mahavishnu, the material creation. And in that creation, then, all of the living entities are allowed to enact their different pastimes. Not exactly pastimes. Certainly not like Krishna's pastimes. So they're illusory in a sense that they're temporary. As Prabhupada points out, nice class that in 1966, actually the whole sequence of classes in 1966 where Prabhupada reads from the Bhagavad Gita, very interesting. The Prabhupada makes a point, he says, I may be a temporary resident here, I'm just a visitor. And therefore I can't stay here for very long. But still, my stay is reality. The fact that I'm here, and that I'm talking, and that I'm eating and sleeping and doing all of these things, even though I'm only here for a short period of time, and my activities here are not permanent, still I'm here. So the living entity is in this sort of like temporary residence state. We're temporary residents in the material world. There's no such thing as PR here. We try to set up shop. We like to think, yes, I get my PR and everything's okay. But actually in the material creation, it is just this phantasmagoria. We have our independence, and in one sense, we are the creator of our destiny. We're the creator of our circumstance. This is one thing for the, you know, for the materialistic people to, for those of the materialistic bent, it's hard for them to appreciate this, that we have the responsibility. The ultimate responsibility rests on Krishna, as he's quoted here, as saying. In my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. So everything is resting on Krishna. The whole creation is resting on the Lord's potencies, actually. This is how Krishna does it. It appears to be contradictory. By me and my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. And yet everything that is created does not rest in me. This appears to be contradictory. How to understand this? So Krishna's creating the material creation, and he's sleeping, then all the material universes are coming out. And then the living entities, according to their desire, then they're playing in the material creation, as if it were real. But as is pointed out here, that playing, you can hardly call it playing, actually, when you think about it, it's just basically struggle for existence. How many of you enjoyed this week as if it was just play? Not many of us, I think. We're all working hard. So, according to our desires and according to our deserts, then we get this struggle for existence in the material creation. And of course, we take it very seriously. It's like a child takes their play very seriously. I remember when I was 6, 7, and 8, and we used to get these dinky toys. You know, if you had a Rolls Royce dinky toy, then I have a Rolls Royce. Very important. I used to go over to my friend's place, who lived over the road, and he had a big sand pit in his backyard. And we used to create highways and houses and forts and, you know, get the tanks out and the army soldiers. And then Mum would come and call out, "Okay, time for dinner. Oh, I'm coming. I've got important things to do." Then we get caught back up in the game for another half an hour, and then Mum would come out with a wooden spoon. "Didn't I tell you to come home for dinner?" Still have the same problem now. "Didn't I tell you to come home for dinner?" "What are you doing in the office?" "I've got one more thing to do." You know, we take our activities in the material world very, very seriously. You know, when Krishna says, "Time to come home," they say, "Hang on, I've got one more thing to do." So, we are the architects of our fate, if you like, because it's our choice. Krishna provides us with the material energy, and even though it's an illusion, because it's not really who we are, still we're absorbed in it. And so therefore it's real, it's actually happening. We are in the material world. It's not like, you know, we're not here. We're definitely here. But it's not our real position. It's not the place that we should be, just like, you know, a man may become absorbed in his dreams. But sooner or later he has to wake up to the reality. As it comes to his senses and realize what the actual position is. And the material creation is designed in that way. The material energy is designed in that way, but it's not really play. It is struggle for existence. Dukkha dosa anudarshanam. Janma mrityu juradhyadhi. Dukkha dosa anudarshanam, Krishna explains. Material creation is not ever going to be a place of satisfaction or pleasure. It is actually a place of immense suffering. As a result of that desire is to enjoy separately from Krishna. And that's not our position. We actually have to put ourselves in a state of ignorance. Or as a result of our desire to be separate from Krishna, we have to be put into a state of ignorance. And that ignorance is really a state of suffering. And when we think we're enjoying, that's just the suffering is decreasing. Then we think, "Oh, wow, this is really good," but it's just because they loosened up the screws. Prabhupada tells the story of the dunking stool. This is the material world. This is how they used to punish criminals in medieval times. Tie them on like a seesaw and then dip them into the pond until they breathed out all of their air and they're just about to drown, basically speaking, and then pull them out. And just the fact that you can breathe air, oh, what a relief, then back into the water again. So there is a higher reality. There's a point here. The living entities are in a conditioned state. And by refocusing our attention back on Krishna, one can again see things as they are, rather than being in this state of ignorance or sleep, basically, dreaming state, dreamlike condition. One can actually, basically, we only see the name, the forms, and the names of those forms around us. That's what is mentioned here. In our dreaming condition, not last night, but the night before, I had this dream that I was with an old friend, and it was like they were right there. Wow. It's good to see you. Somebody I haven't seen for 30 years. Previous night, I was dreaming about the devotees. I was having an argument with Prabhupada Swami. What's it all about? But I remember making some loud pronouncement, then I woke up. And what was that all about? Then the night after, I was dreaming about an old friend who I hadn't seen for 32 years. And it was just like, whoa. Yeah. So that those experiences feel real. And we're totally absorbed in them. So similarly also here in the material creation, we're totally absorbed in the forms created by the material energy. And we accept them as being real. But as is explained here, behind those forms is actually another reality. And it is possible for us to see beyond the forms of this material creation. To wake up, basically, from our sleeping condition where we're forced to. Experience here, it's mentioned in this purport. Just as a person's dream is a secondary reality created from the stock of his memories and desires. Our dreams, basically, just a combination of a mental sort of state that we create for ourselves. So that state of being is actually an inferior situation. So similarly also this material creation is also an inferior creation of Krishna, and a living entity in that conditioned state doesn't have to relate to the inferior conditioning, but can actually see through it. Queen Kunti mentions in her prayers how she prays to Krishna, please draw the curtain of Maya so I can actually see you. So at the moment, it's like the curtain is drawn and all we see is the external. We're not actually able to see the internal. And it's explained how there are three energies. There's the Antaranga Shakti, which is the internal spiritual potency of Krishna. Then there's the Bahiranga Shakti, that's the external energy. That's what we're seeing all around us, well, what we're in, more or less. And then we are the marginal potency, Tatastha Shakti, which means that we can be under the influence of the material energy, or we can be under the influence of the spiritual energy. It's our choice, what we want to do. we're conditioned, so we have bad habits, so we tend to fall back into this conditioned state. But we don't have to be. We're marginal, which means we can be on one side or on the other side. And so therefore, you know, we're in the material world as a result of our poor decision making. Right? And you know, all of the situations that are created for us are as a result of the decisions that we take. And when we realise, when the living energy realises that, and this really occurs due to the mercy of Krishna. Due to the mercy of Krishna, then he brings us into the association of persons who actually are able to see beyond the names and forms of the material creation to the superior reality that exists behind everything. And then in that association, then we start to engage in devotional service. Atasi Krishna Namadi Bhavi Graya Vindriya. That, you know, you can't actually understand Krishna. You can't see through the material creation with our material senses. You can't perceive the spiritual reality with our gross material senses. However, it's interesting, you know, there was a group of students that came to see me the other day, and they were saying, you know, how is this spiritual? All I can see is material things around here. Huh? Marble on the floor, mirrors on the ceiling, flowers and clock. And it's interesting, the person would say, how is this spiritual? It's all material to me. So yes, well, it's a fact, it is material, because what have we got? We've got a material body. We've got material mind and senses. But it's explained in the Prabhupada explains, explained in the Vedas, in the scriptures, how that ultimately everything has a connection with the Lord. Everything has a connection with Krishna. This is Krishna's energy also. It actually is spiritual energy. It's just it's being used for the wrong things at the moment. It's being used in the wrong way. Well, I explained to that the couple who came and interviewed me about religion, and they're saying that religion seems to be the cause of a lot of trouble in the world. And I made a point that, yes, just like a knife. A knife in the right hands can be used in the performance of a surgical operation to save the life of a... I think my battery's gone flat. A knife in the hands of a surgeon, skilled surgeon, can save lives. Huh? Yet a knife in the hand of a crazy man, he can go out and kill a dozen people. So the material energy, it's illusory, actually. It is not what it appears to be. Actually, it's Krishna's. This is why Krishna says, everything rests in me. Because the material energy is just an extension of Krishna's form. Or... He's turned me off. Prabhupada quotes a verse from the Puranas. How does it go? Ekadesha stitas jagge vistarini yata. Why don't you just take the battery out of this one and put it in the other one?
I just put a little mic in the battery.
Is it the same microphone? Not the same microphone. It's not charged. Oh, I've just got to turn it up. Ekate shasti tas jagye jyotsna vistarini yata. Ah. basically, the example is that just as a fire is situated in the fireplace, you want to keep the fire in the fireplace, otherwise you've got trouble. But its presence is felt all throughout the room in the form of its heat and light. So we can say the fire is in the room, but you know, the fire is in the fireplace. But its presence is felt in the room through the expansion of its heat and light. So similarly also, Krishna is situated in the spiritual world, but his presence is felt throughout the whole creation because of the manifestation of the creation through his energy. That's how he maintains and supports everything. And it's how he's within everything. Because Prabhupada says that we shouldn't think just because Krishna has spread himself all throughout the creation in his Avyakta Murtina. That's quoted in this verse here. Mayapatam idam saravam jagat Avyakta Murtina. I am situated within everything, but in an impersonal form. All you need to do is turn it up, because that's...
Yeah, no, it's full up. Mm-hmm. It should be a lot louder.
Okay.
That one's on mute there.
Hare Krishna.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, maybe you can turn this down. Yes, by me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. So this, the material energy is actually Krishna. Krishna's expansion, Krishna is manifest in this, well, unmanifested form. In other words, we don't see him personally. But just because he is manifested in what is avyakta, a manifest form, doesn't mean that he is not personally present within it. It's Krishna's potency. And that he has lost his personality as a result, because he's spread throughout everything, that therefore he's lost his personality, which is the argument of the impersonalists. If God is within everything, then, you know, he doesn't have any personality, he's just everything. But of course we understand that, yes, the material energy is God, but it's God in the form of his energy. That's his expansion. And the devotee is able to break the influence of that material energy, that Maya Shakti, if you like, that's able to bewilder the living entity into thinking he's a product of the material energy, when he uses that energy again for its real purpose. In other words, the material energy, rather than being used for our purposes, we start using it for Krishna's purposes. So just like the example I was giving of the madman with a knife, he can, you know, create havoc. But the surgeon with the scalpel can save lives. So similarly also, when the living entity comes to his senses and realizes, yes, this is all just basically a state of confusion and ignorance, and I want to get out of it, then he starts to use the material energy according to the prescription. You know, it has to be done. It's not that we can create our own process, but rather we have to use the authorized process. But then when we start to use the material energy according to the authorized process, then instead of being material energy and having that covering potency, it becomes spiritual energy, and as a result of it being used in the correct way, then it purifies. That's the nature of the spiritual energy. It is pavitrami dhammuttamam. It is pure and transcendental. And that's the natural state of the living entity. It's pure and transcendental. But in his covered state, his original spiritual, our original spiritual position is covered by the material energy. Very powerful. Daivi hiyesha gunamayi mama maya dharatyaya. Krishna says it's very, very difficult to overcome. What is it? Mameva ye prapadyante mayami tam turanjitam, is it? Yeah. When we, but however, if we surrender to Krishna, and we surrender to Krishna through the surrendering process, which is the process of devotional service. And the process of devotional service means that we use what things which appear to be material, but actually when they're again used in the service of the spiritual, then they become rejuvenated or reinvigorated with spiritual potency. So as I was explaining to the students, that even though it appears to be material, actually it's not. And it's just like the, Prabhupada gave the example of the iron rod. Iron rod is just a lump of metal, dull metal. But if you get the iron rod and you stick it in the fire, and heat it up, and heat it up, and heat it up, then you can take the iron rod out of the fire, which would ordinarily be just dull inner metal, and you can then use it as if it were fire, to burn things. So, the material energy is actually the spiritual energy, used in a proper way. So, you know, we have this Mahamaya, that's the covering of the living entity. And what puts him into illusion and he thinks, yes, I'm enjoying here. But that same energy converted through the process of devotional service then becomes the cause of his liberation. When it's utilized in devotional service. So we're all sitting in Krishna's energy, if you like. At the moment we can't see him. But when we use that energy in Krishna's service, then the potency of devotional service, in other words, engaging that material energy in spiritual activities, it ceases to be material and it be and the covering. Maya, what is it, Maya? I've forgotten it. Kunti Praise. That covering of the material energy can be drawn like a curtain. And then we're able to see. Maya Jivani Kacharam. She says, let that curtain of material energy be drawn, and it's drawn by engagement in devotional service under the auspices, under the guidance of the devotees. That's a devotee, that's our job, actually. First of all, we have to engage in devotional service. Well, first of all, we have some faith. Adosh Radha. First of all, we have some faith. There's got to be a better way. There's something beyond this existence. That's faith. There's something sublime and transcendental beyond this state of confusion. I used to think that when I was a kid. There's something going on here, I want to find out what it is. This can't be it. If this is it, then we're getting a raw deal. It must be something better. So that faith pushes us. Then when the devotee comes in association with the devotees, then that faith is magnified, it is multiplied. It starts to impel the conditioned soul into engagement in devotional service. Bhajana Kriya. So, although Shraddha, in the beginning we have some faith, then that faith is magnified. Sadhu Sangha in the association of the devotees. And in that association of the devotees, then we take up the process of engaging the Lord's energy in the service of the Lord. Previously we engaged in material energy in our own service, and then we just get ourselves in a mess. And then when we start engaging it all in Krishna's service, it's all His. In the association of devotees, then it takes on its spiritual potency. Even it's explained how even the reactions that we get as devotees, they're not even material reactions. Not like our karma. It's a shadow of our karma. So the devotees engage themselves, and then they engage others with faith in the bhajana kriya, the activities of bhajan, devotional service. So I mentioned this the other day, when Gaudiya Maharaj would greet you in Oriya, he would say, how's your bhajan going? How's your bhajan going? So this is a measure of... Actually, Enzo, our next door neighbor, said to me yesterday, how do you measure success? How do we measure success? We measure success by how well we're able to see Krishna within everything, and how we're able to keep engaging everything in Krishna's service. Then by that engagement in Krishna's service, then we start to make progress. Anatta nivritti, nishtha, steadiness, removing the bad things. That's why we have follow the regulated principles and don't do this and don't do that. Those are negative things. Anatta nivritti, give up the unwanted things. And then in giving up the unwanted things, then we will gradually rise to the level of nishtha, or steadiness in our devotional service. And that state that gradually the coverings of the material energy will be lifted. Mama maya jalatya, very difficult to overcome. Mameva ye prapanchante, we surrender to Krishna, however. Mayami tam karantite, we can overcome the influence of the material energy. And that's like waking up. Huh? We wake up. It's like we were on kirtan, we're having harinam the other night, Friday night, and I was feeling a bit sluggish and a bit tired. And it took us a while to get into the kirtan, but then by the end of the evening we were all jumping up and down, and so is everybody else. That was amazing. As you can tell, it's going to be a good kirtan when you're just starting the chanting and you may be not quite into it, there's all these other people jumping up and down. Well, you know, this is what happens in the association of the devotees. You know, people just automatically want to get engaged in Krishna service, even if they don't know. So I was thinking, I'm a bit slow here tonight, but then there was people coming along, and we'd only been chanting for about 30 seconds, and they're jumping up and down. I thought, oh, okay, this is a good start. They're jumping up and down, so we will be soon. But that's the potency of devotional service, the potency especially of kirtan, if we absorb ourselves in the practice of devotional service, if we absorb ourselves especially in the chanting of the holy name, then the material energy just evaporates, just disappears. And, Krishna will carry us to a different level of consciousness, different level of experience. And that's what we want. We want to be able to see the spiritual reality. Even if we're in a material world, we want an experience of our real self. And by following the bhajana kriya, by following the process of devotional service, especially for us, that means sacrifice, and basically that sacrifice is in the chanting of the holy names. And through the chanting of the holy names, then Krishna, by that association with Krishna, and by that engagement in devotional service, then gradually Krishna lifts the covering of the material creation so that we can start to see things as they are. And gradually slacken our hold on material things and increase our hold on the spiritual. We were discussing this the other day, I think, in the Bhakti Shastri, how, you know, devotees like Raghunath Das and other Goswamis and associates of Lord Chaitanya, they were so absorbed in their spiritual meditation, in their absorption of their Siddha Deha, their Nitya Siddha spiritual form, in their past lives with Krishna, that they could completely transcend the material form, that they didn't have to eat. Or they forget to eat. Or they forget to sleep. Right? Because they're just so absorbed in their spiritual, in their devotional service. So they become so absorbed in the reality that they're completely aloof from the dream. Right? Amazing. How the potency of devotional service. So externally it appears as if it's all being done through the material energy, but actually it's all being done under the influence of the spiritual energy, and one's able to transcend the effect or the influence of the material creation. And that's what we're, you know, that's the experience that we're looking for. We're looking for a spiritual experience, not a material experience. And material experiences, we know, are pretty disappointing. But a spiritual experience through the process of devotional service is anandam buddhivardhanam pratipatam purnam amritasvardhanam. Right? Purnamrita means the complete nectar. That would mean chanting Hare Krishna this on Friday night, we're chanting Hare Krishna, I think, well, this is it. This is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Why don't we do this all the time? Because then my fingers are splitting and can have a stand up, I'm so tired. And I realise, well, material. But even then, actually, you know, there are stories in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Vakrasvara Pandit would dance for 48 hours in the kirtan. Can you imagine having a kirtan for 48 hours? Well, there's even stories of Lord Chaitanya, you know, one moment he would become so heavy, he'd fall on the floor, and it was almost like the whole universe is shaking. And they couldn't pick him up. And then in the next moment, he'd be like a puff of, like a cotton ball. And they could, the bodies could just sort of pretty much float around the room. Just floating. Yeah. Now that's a kirtan. But you see that, you see, when the devotees go out and chant Hare Krishna, and the people also there, because it was quite amazing how many passages, there were a lot of people in the kirtan on Friday night, I don't know if you noticed, who were actually chanting Hare Krishna. Now, some of them were chanting very loudly also. There was one Indian man who was there for a long time. And he was just sort of mouthing the words, you know, chanting along with us. But then by the time we were probably there for about 3/4 of an hour, by the time we got to the end of the kirtan, he was just chanting really loudly. And then there was the other couple with the little boy that the devotees were dancing with, and that little kid, he was going to explode out of his body. And he was only about 1.5, he was only just walking, this little kid. And his mum and dad, they were just in it. So it's a very simple thing, actually. The process of devotional service is not a very complicated activity. Activity is not very complicated. But the results are completely transcendental. Not to be underestimated. People underestimate the potency of devotional service, but not to be underestimated. And that way, we can see gradually, gradually. Shanaya, Shanaya, Uparamet. And Krishna explains in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Gradually, gradually, we pull ourselves by the process of our sadhana. Krishna, seeing the sincerity of the devotees, he lifts the covering of the material energy so that the devotees are able to see the reality that Krishna is manifest throughout the whole creation in the form of his energy. Which in the material condition covers us, but in the spiritual, when it's engaged in the spiritual devotional service, then it reveals Krishna, reveals the reality. Process of devotional service, bhakti basically, it helps to reveal Krishna. Actually, it attracts Krishna. When we start to engage everything in Krishna's service, then Krishna is attracted towards us. And Prabhupada gives the example, just like a child. When he gives a present to his parents, then the parents feel very affectionate, although he's simply just giving back what the parents have already given him. But because he's giving it with affection and love, then the parents are very attracted to that. So Krishna, you know, it's not that we're giving anything to Krishna that he doesn't already have. He already owes everything. But when we offer it to him in appreciation for what he's given up, then he's attracted to that. So his devotional service actually attracts Krishna, even if it is manifest through apparently material energy. That's all we've got. So what else we can offer? Even the deity appears in stone or in wood, for example. Right? But it's not, because it's Krishna's energy, and because we ask Krishna, we actually request Krishna, please be present here. Because the devotee is offering service and his whole energy to Krishna, then Krishna is present, powerfully present, in the form of the deity. In the form of the service. Well, I'm going to finish it. Does anybody have any comments or questions? Yes, Namaji.
And the Rupa, when you are saying about that, for Rupa number, Rupa Goswami is telling an act of devotion, Krishna Krishna.
Yes.
We saw that example only 6 months back with Bhujan Prabhu in Nandgram Farm, first September.
Yeah.
We all were chanting for that. That man.
Yes. And we're picking the devotees up and throwing them around the room too, I noticed. Yeah. Yes.
Excellent demonstration.
Yeah. Did they pick you up?
No.
No.
They picked you up.
I know, they picked me up. Bunch of thugs. Gundas. Spiritual Gundas.
When we were talking about the Sakura Swami, how they would be grateful that they're following me. So they're very renounced. Obviously, Maharaj was saying they were in a very frail condition of life because they were so absorbed in Krishna brain. They were attending to the body at all. When I was thinking of our condition, one of the most difficult things for the devotee is to find the right level of renunciation, which is going to help us advance in this consciousness. That's not the only comment about that.
Yes, I was thinking,
I remember as a young devotee, you know, we try all sorts of different things. You know, we can't attain, but it's hard to find a level. Sometimes someone might make a vow, I'll never get married, and then. But he's no longer a baby. So there's all sorts of things that drive to try and become renounced. But I guess we need to clarify that. I don't know what your comments have been on that. But how to find that right?
The balance.
The balance of renunciation.
The balance of renunciation. Well, I was thinking last night I need to empty out my wardrobe. And throw away half the stuff that I don't need. Live a simple life. I said, an indication of that, I was listening to a lecture the other day, and Prabhupada was saying, anashaktasya vishayam yatahamukha yunjataha, that anashaktasya means we engage our senses in service to Krishna, but without attachment to the objects of the senses. Prabhupada explained, he said, that means, you know, we accept what we need to eat, but we don't overindulge. We accept the amount of sleep that we require. Prabhupada gave the example, I mentioned this in the Bhakti Shastri class, because it was in relationship to the fifth chapter that we're studying at the moment, that, you know, an elephant can eat 100 pounds two times a day of vegetables. When I used to work at the zoo, they used to bring the bargain bin for the elephant. You know, it was a tip truck full of cabbage leaves. And so Sammy the elephant, someone who's probably left the body now, but she used to basically devour this, you know, half of this truckload of cabbage leaves. And then Prabhupada said that the ant can only eat, you know, one grain of sugar, basically. You know, that's all he eats to keep going. And then Prabhupada said, you know, the elephant shouldn't think, okay, today I'm just going to eat one grain of sugar. And then Prabhupada chuckles and he says, and the ant shouldn't think, today I'm going to eat, you know, 100 pounds of cabbage leaves. So what we need to maintain, you know, the body together. And so therefore, and Krishna mentions in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, yuktahara viharasya. So regulated eating, regulated sleeping. Yeah. Yukta kama sachetasu yukta swapna bhavodasya yoga bhavati duktaha. So a balanced life is recommended for the devotees. So it takes us a while to work that out. What is, you know, what's a balanced life? Because we try to go, oh, I won't have too much of this, but then we go, I'm pulled over here. I mentioned this to the devotees in the class the other day. You know, the brahmacharis, oh, okay, I'm not going to eat. To show a sign of spiritual advancement, you know, got to make. Actually, the problem is, you know, just not eating is not actually a sign of spiritual advancement necessarily. It may be, but just simply not eating is not making spiritual advancement. You used to see with the brahmacharis, they just have a small bowl, you know, for breakfast. This is all I'm going to eat. But then, you know, after a week of doing that, they have this small bowl, but it's piled up like about this time. So you might as well just have a normal plate, you know, like everybody else. And instead of piling everything on top of each other, just eat it normally like everybody else. So, you know, we need to recognise what our requirements are. The elephant has to eat a certain amount, the ant has to eat a certain amount, that's what we eat. And we're allowed that. It's not Maya to have those things. In fact, Krishna mentions, you know, or was mentioned in the Upanishad, that we're allowed to accept that which is put aside as our quota. So each one of, you know, basically, that's what Prabhupada would make fun out of, you know, man who works very, very hard to, you know, gain a big, big, big fortune, and all the stress and the strife and the struggle he has to go through to get all that money. Prabhupada says, well, how many chapatis can he eat? How many chapatis can a rich man eat? Well, the same as a poor man. In fact, Kendra mentioned in his blog yesterday, I noticed, he's saying, you know, actually, no, he was quoting a survey that was published in the papers this week about the happiness you know, the level of happiness that you can achieve. And they basically discovered that once you've got $100,000, any more money that you earn over $100,000 doesn't actually make you happier, it makes you more miserable. So, you know, there's the level of diminishing returns. You need to work up to a certain point to maintain yourself. But once you go over that point, you're just working, and what do you get? Just the headache of working. Unless it's devotional service. But even then, as devotees, we probably need to relax a little bit. This is especially pertinent for myself. We tend to overdo it. So getting the balance right it's a bit of an art. But basically calculated on what we require, what we're capable of doing, basically. Then we can keep engaged in devotional service, chant our rounds, study Prabhupada's books, and, you know, do a decent day's service, and then be happy, basically, be satisfied. There will be challenges. So, balance. We've got to find the balance. And it'll be different for each one of us. Each one of us will have our own particular, you know, slot in which to fit. But, you know, you would see the devotees who'd be on a high renunciation diet, right? And then they'd be gobbling up the maha at 7 o'clock. And, you know, in those days, we used to lock the maha in the cupboard. So that when guests came, you would give the prasadam to the guests. And Prabhupada wanted us to be able to feed people when they came to the temple. So in those days, we didn't get as many guests as we get now. So the maha prasadam would be put in the cupboard. The devotees could have some at meal times, but the rest would be put in the cupboard. So, you know, the highly renounced brahmacharis would often be caught raiding the maha cupboard. I'm just getting some prasadam for a guest. Oh yeah. Where's the guest? There's even a time when one devotee was found in the cupboard eating the maha prasadam. Who's got the key to the maha cupboard? It's funny how things have changed. You remember the maha cupboard, Prabhu? And Dami would get in there and eat all the sweets when he shouldn't, and he'd get really sick. Anyway, those are the good old days. Guru Gopal had the key to the cupboard. The wrong person had the key. You had a question?
I was just going to say about balance, like probably part of the balance is anxiety over balance. Like anxiety and trying to, you know, whatever.
Yeah. You know, there were some days when I would eat almost every offering. I can hardly wait for the 4 o'clock to come out. Now what about the 7 o'clock? I might just have a little bit of the 9 o'clock. And I used to think, when am I ever going to control my tongue? And gradually it all works out. If you keep chanting Hare Krishna and engaging in devotional service, then Krishna mentions Desham Satata Yuktanam Vajatam Pritikurva Kam Kadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Jena Mamapayanti Tahim. Krishna says that to those who are devoted, for those who engage in my devotional service, and I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me. Tadami buddhi yogam tam. So I give the devotees the intelligence. So gradually, Krishna will, if we're sincere, and we keep applying ourselves to the process of devotional service, then Krishna will reveal to us, Prabhu, 10 chapatis is more than you need. Yes, we do. Yeah. That's called our intelligence.
God was saying that everyone should rise to the highest level of renunciation.
The highest level of renunciation?
The highest level of their renunciation. And we have, each of us has a certain capacity for that, some more than others.
Yeah.
So we should aspire to, to renounce as much as we can.
Yes, but the real point that Prabhupada makes in renunciation, this, we've just done this in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the real point of renunciation is to use things in Krishna's service, not give up things. Because the tendency is to give up things that could actually be used in Krishna's service. Yes, Agul Vairanja Ucchate, it is said, that's false renunciation, so... takes us some time to work out that what's good for us, somebody else may be very renounced. And that's natural for them and they're just absorbed. Like Raghunath Das just absorbed in devotional service and he doesn't worry about eating. But if we try to manifest the same degree of renunciation, it's probably not appropriate for us. But if we utilize what we've got, and what we're doing in Krishna service, and that's full renunciation. Do you know what I mean? That's full renunciation. And the example that I gave, the devotees thought that spiritual life was, meant to be austere. And yet at the Sunday feast, Prabhupada would cook up this big feast. And he'd cook samosas and gulab jamuns and sweet rice. And then he was stuffed with devotees full of prasadam. And they found that a little difficult at first. They found that a little difficult to cope with it. But our spiritual life is supposed to be a bit austere.
First one, the temple. They were doing Chadamasya.
Chadamasya, yeah.
And it was a split peg rule.
Split?
And
yeah.
That was all.
That was it.
No space.
For the whole of Chaturmasya.
Well, that's right.
What about Sunday feast?
Oh, you're allowed to take
it. Yeah. How would you like that? For this Chaturmasya, all we're going to have is unspiced khichdi and nothing else for prasadam. All those in favour, please raise your hands. Okay. You're on. See how long you last. And I was explaining to the devotees the other day how you're supposed to do it. You're supposed to eat with your hands behind your back, and you're only allowed to go down, and then if you come up, that's it, finish, not allowed to eat anymore. well cooked unspiced khichdi. Yeah. And the measure of the success of that kind of renunciation is that then the devotional service gets disturbed. So when a person is eating and sleeping properly and comfortably, make sure you've got your socks on in the winter time, and you're warm enough and all of those basic kind of things that Mum used to tell you to do. Eat your dinner, have a good night's sleep, put your socks on. If you do that, then you can do a full day service. Whereas, otherwise, oh, boo-boo, I'm sick, I'm cold, I've got a cold. We went to Tasmania to do Sankirtan, and we were trying to save money. So we decided that we wouldn't put any money in the water heater in the morning, and it was in June. And, it felt like you were taking bath in a bucket of ice cubes. So I just poured a bucket of ice cubes over it. It woke him up. But when we got back, my Sankirtan partner spent 2 weeks in bed with pneumonia. So, you know, this is the result of false renunciation. All we need to do is put 10 cents in the heater and then we have a warm shower. We just like, nah. We're the Sankirtan devotees. We're renounced. And quickly dead. So we've got to be rational, reasonable.
And I think that it's just a lot of
yes. Most of the time, it should be yes. If we're performing it properly, then it will be.